It's a great kavod to be here, and of course, on this day of the levaya of Reb Chaim Kanievsky, to be learning in recognition of his tremendous contribution to Limud HaTorah and his inspiration to our Limud HaTorah. And at this time, when we are technically in the zone of preparation for Pesach, and I tried to figure out with Rabbi Shur what would be an appropriate topic to talk about when we are technically with that in mind, we are within the period when we are preparing for Pesach, and that's a little bit of an intimidating thought, the notion that we now have to pivot to that preparation for Pesach and everything that comes with it, and that brings such an intimidating mindset. And to think about why that is, why is it that we have to clean out our houses for Pesach? Why is it that we're not allowed to have chametz in our homes on Pesach? That is a pair of prohibitions in the Torah. The notion of both Bal Yiroeh and Bal Yimotzeh, that we're not allowed to have chametz findable in our homes, and we're not allowed to have chametz that is ours that can be seen. Apparently, two prohibitions in the Torah. Why is that the case? We understand that we're not allowed to eat chametz on Pesach, and hashkafically, what that involves is actually a different discussion. We won't talk about that so much today. There's a lot to say about the hashkafic implications of chametz. We find that there is a connection between chametz and the Yetzer Hara. It's actually a connection that's explicitly drawn in the Gemara in at least one place, where the Talmud tells us that we have a prayer that we say to God, listen, we want to do the right thing, but what can we do? The Sor Shavi'isa gets in the way. The chametz gets in the way of our hoping to try to do the right thing. And apparently the chametz has a imagery of being like the Yetzer Hara. Perhaps it reflects that which rises when we don't pay attention, when we're not necessarily on top of it, and we're not taking disciplined action to try to make sure that we're always doing the right thing. So then the Yetzer Hara interferes, and the whole notion of moving from avdus into people who are in control of their time and their decisions. So the Yetzer Hara is represented by chametz in that sense. So however we relate to the concept of chametz as imagery of Yetzer Hara or something worse, or perhaps something specific to the notion of freedom that Pesach is supposed to represent. And there's an interesting discussion of whether perhaps chametz really is so bad that it should have been prohibited all year round, and just we wouldn't be able to handle that, so we only avoid it on Pesach, but really all year round chametz should have been bad. However we understand chametz, whatever it is, it should have been enough just to avoid eating chametz. Why is it so bad that we're not even allowed to own chametz? And that is the crucial question, because that's what's scaring us right now, a month before Pesach. That's what puts on this big obligation of Pesach cleaning. If all we had to do was avoid eating chametz on Pesach, so yes, there'd be a lot of cooking that needs to be done. There'd be a lot of Seder preparation. There'd be a lot of Haggadah reading that would need to be done. And that would still take a lot. But the notion of turning over the whole house and of cleaning all of the corners and all of the nooks and crannies, that wouldn't be such a problem. That wouldn't be presenting itself with all of the intimidating aspects that it has right now. So the notion of Pesach cleaning, the idea that we're not even allowed to own chametz, Bal Yiroeh and Bal Yimotzeh, why is that its own concept? Why is it that we're not allowed to even own chametz on Pesach? So to address this, the most prominent idea that we have to explain the prohibition of owning chametz is an idea that's expressed by the Ran. The Ran, one of the great Rishonim, in his commentary to the beginning of Pesachim, has an idea which probably a lot of other Rishonim also agreed with. And the Ran understands that what we have here is a prohibition min haTorah, which functions in a way that's very similar to prohibitions midrabanan. That we normally understand that the Torah has objective dinim, objective mitzvos that are there either as positive mitzvos or negative mitzvos, and that rabbinic law is often there to protect the Torah. But perhaps what we have here is a Torah mitzvah that's there to protect the Torah also, similar to a rabbinic law. What you might call a siag min haTorah, a siag, a protective measure that's there from the Torah itself. So that's how the Ran understands that the prohibition of owning chametz is protective in nature, and that really there isn't an inherent problem with owning chametz on Pesach. The problem really is eating the chametz. So why did the Torah prohibit owning chametz? Because the concern is, if we own chametz, if we have chametz in the house, we might come to eat the chametz. So why do we have that prohibition specifically by chametz? There are a lot of other foods that we're not allowed to eat at various times. So why don't we have a prohibition to own, for example, pork? Pork, we're not allowed to eat that either. So why don't we have a prohibition to eat chazer? To own chazer, rather? Why don't we have a prohibition to have chazer in the house? So there, it's an interesting insight into psychology. Where do we find that we have to go the extra step and we have to have a prohibition to not even own something in order to keep us from going to the full violation? So here, there are two very different reasons why chametz is a more dangerous prohibition than chazer. They come from two very different directions. One is that chametz is a more serious prohibition. It's a more serious prohibition because we look at the onesh. When it comes to chazer, it's a normal prohibition. It's what we call an iser lav. It's subject to a punishment of malchus. While chametz is an iser kares. That's considered to be a significantly more serious prohibition. And then the other reason is more psychological. It goes to just how risky the prohibition is. How likely is it that you will eat chametz on Pesach compared to the possibility that you're going to eat chazer? So here it's more risky that you're going to eat chametz on Pesach. Because when it comes to chazer, so you never, your whole life, have eaten chazer, very likely. So therefore, for whatever reason, you have a pork sandwich in your kitchen and you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and you're hungry. So you're not likely to, in the middle of your tiredness, have the pork sandwich because you've never had the pork sandwich. And so you're in the habit of distancing yourself from it. So you're not likely to eat it even in the middle of the night. But if you come down at 2 o'clock in the morning on the week of Pesach and you have a peanut butter sandwich in your kitchen, so then you might indeed have that peanut butter sandwich because you're not in the habit of avoiding that peanut butter sandwich. 51 weeks a year, it's mutter, it's okay. So then you may indeed come to have that peanut butter sandwich, and therefore we need to have that extra safeguard to make sure that's not in your kitchen. And therefore, for those two reasons, both the severity of the prohibition and the likelihood that you may come to eat it, for those combination of reasons, we have to keep it away from you. And therefore, the Torah makes this special safeguard that we have to tell you you're not even allowed to own chametz on Pesach, bal yirah, bal yimatzeh. It has to be kept out of the household. So that's a fascinating idea because indeed we normally relate to the notion of a protective measure of a siag. We normally think that's the rabbi's job, that's something that's a concept midrabanan, that the Torah gives us inherent values, either mitzvos that are inherently valuable or prohibitions that reflect things that are bad in and of themselves. And the idea of a protective measure, that's something that the rabbis put on. So the idea that the Torah itself would have protective measures, that's surprising to us. Now, it happens to be there was a great Gaon, Rav Yosef Engel, who lived about 100 years ago, a little bit more. He died about 405 years ago in Poland. And he had beautiful Svarim. And in one of his Svarim, he wrote an essay, said, do we ever find anywhere where there's a notion of a siag min ha-Torah, of a mitzvah min ha-Torah that's there just for protective reasons, just to support another mitzvah? And he says, yeah, let me think about it for a minute. And he came up with about 20 examples. And this was one of the first examples on his list. The fact that we're not allowed to own chametz on Pesach, that was very high in his list. And this Ran was one of the first sources that he quoted, this idea that owning chametz on Pesach is prohibited because we might come to own it. Now, the psychology here, the idea that we have to be more careful specifically because 51 weeks a year, it's mutter. So this reflects something very insightful about just how careful you have to be about different things. And this was a part of the lesson that the rabbis learned when they made their rules, because they also didn't just make rules whenever they felt like it. They were very careful about how to apply the insights that the Torah taught them about when they had to make extra rules and when they didn't have to. And there's a fascinating discussion that surrounds the earliest moments in human history, that when Adam and Chava were in the Garden of Eden, so the Torah tells us that God said to them that they can't eat from the Eitz Hadas, but somehow it got changed because Chava tells the Nachash that God said to them that they can't touch, not eat, they can't touch the Eitz Hadas. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin comments based on that, that Kol HaMosif Gareya, that whoever adds on to something is actually taking away, because look how much damage she did by adding on to what God said. God said, they're not supposed to eat from the Eitz Hadas, and she represented it as, they're not supposed to touch it. So the Nachash convinced her, look, touch the Eitz Hadas, you'll see nothing will happen. So she did that, she touched it, she saw the world didn't fall apart, and that's how everything collapsed, because she thought that it didn't really matter. But had she just represented it as it was, that the problem was eating from the Eitz Hadas, then she would have saw that indeed there was a serious command from God, and everything would have gone on track. So says the Talmud, you see that it's a problem to add on. So many ask the question, but we are supposed to add on. We have this notion of a siu siag l'Torah, that we have the whole concept of rabbinic law, who do take steps to protect the Torah and who do add on rules to keep us away from sin. So why does the Talmud learn from this situation, Kol HaMosif Gareya, that you shouldn't add on? Normally we understand that there is great value to adding on. So I would have thought that the answer is it's all in the presentation. That probably what should have happened here was if Adam and Chava had had a discussion and said, listen, God told us that we shouldn't eat from the tree, it's probably a good idea that we shouldn't touch the tree either. That will keep us away from sin. So then they'll understand that the real issue is eating from the tree. And they're making a policy they also shouldn't touch the tree. But they understand that that's just a safeguard, and that's not going to confuse them as far as what's the real issue and what's the safeguard. Then everything would have gone well. But because she blurred the distinction, and she made it sound as if touching the tree was the problem, and then she touched the tree and nothing happened, and that's where everything fell apart. So it was all the presentation was the problem. That's what I would have thought. But it's interesting, if you look in the Torah Tamima, in his commentary, so the Torah Tamima says, look at chametz, and you'll see that it all goes to the psychology, that we have to be very attentive to the details here. That when it comes to chametz, so there, the Torah itself adds on extra rules because of the details of what's going on. So when it comes to normal prohibitions of eating, so there, the Torah doesn't prohibit us from owning foods that we're not allowed to eat. when it comes to chametz, so we're not even allowed to own it because there we're afraid we're going to come to eat it because 51 weeks a year we are allowed to eat the chametz. So we're in the habit of eating the chametz. So we have to be more careful that maybe we will come to eat it. So chametz requires greater care. But wait a minute. What about Yom Kippur? On Yom Kippur, we're not allowed to eat. And that's a severe prohibition. It's like chametz. And there, we are in the habit of eating. Every other day of the year, we are allowed to eat. So maybe we should say that on Yom Kippur, we have to clean out our houses of all food, and we have to get rid of all the food in our houses on Yom Kippur, because it's a severe prohibition to eat it all on Yom Kippur. And we're in the habit of eating all the other days of the year. So what's the difference between all food on Yom Kippur and chametz on Pesach? So there, the answer is that no, the psychology is subtly different there also. Because on Yom Kippur, we're not eating at all. So it's easier to avoid all food than it is on Pesach, where we are eating, but it's only chametz that we're not eating, and chametz we eat 51 weeks a year. So to be eating, but to avoid one food, and that food we eat most of the time, that's so specific, that's hard, so we have to make sure to get rid of that food. So the Torah says that's something that's particularly dangerous. We have to make sure to get that out of the house. So the Torah is giving us an insight into what's particularly challenging to human psychology. So the Torah Tanina says, when it was going on in Gan Eden, where was it reasonable to make a safeguard and where was it too much? So when it came to the Eitz Hadas, says, is that like Yom Kippur or is that like chametz? So was that an appropriate place to make a safeguard or was that an inappropriate place? So he writes that it seems like it was more like chametz because there she didn't eat from the tree at all. So maybe she thought that was an appropriate place to make a safeguard and say not even touch the tree. But maybe it was really more like Yom Kippur. So he has a whole analysis back and forth, a very fascinating discussion that all draws from what the Torah is telling us about the prohibition of chametz. So there is a lot here that all emanates from the fact that we have this prohibition of chametz on Pesach, which not only tells us that we're not allowed to eat chametz on Pesach, but we're also not allowed even to have chametz in our house, and we have to make sure not to own the chametz on Pesach, apparently as a safeguard, because the Torah realized that we are in particular risk of eating the chametz if we were to have the chametz in our houses. And this, I think, affects a lot of other details of what we find about having chametz on Pesach. So, for example, there was a dispute among the Rishonim about the scope of the issue of ownership of chametz on Pesach. So, for example, there was a machlokes rishonim. There was a big debate about whether the prohibition of ownership on chametz, of chametz on Pesach, applies to chametz mixtures, what we call taruvos chametz. And that's prohibited by the Torah, by the language of kol machmetzes. So if you have something which is just a mixture of chametz, so is that subject to a prohibition of ownership or not? So Rashi writes in the beginning of the third parak of Psachim that he thought that that was prohibited of ownership as well. That the beginning of the third parak of Psachim begins with the language Ve'elu Ovrim Ve'Pesach. So Rashi writes that's a violation also of Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzeh, that you're not allowed to own that either. And Tosfos quotes Rabbeinu Tam as disagreeing. And Tosfos says, no, It means that you shouldn't have it on the table, but there's no application of the iser of owning chametz to that substance. Why not? So Rabbeinu Tam says that here you have something which is not full chametz, and were it not for the pasuk of kol machmetzes, wouldn't have been prohibited. So therefore, you don't apply the prohibition of bal yimatze, of ownership of chametz. So that's a very unusual formulation. What exactly is Rabbeinu Tam getting at? And what does he mean when he says that we shouldn't apply the prohibition of ownership because were it not for the pasuk, it wouldn't have been prohibited? Were it not for the pasuk, nothing would be prohibited. All our prohibitions are because of the Torah. So what does he mean to say that it's only prohibited because of the pasuk, so therefore the extra prohibition of ownership shouldn't attach? So I think perhaps what he's saying is that the prohibition of ownership itself is a safeguard, is an extra step. And the prohibition of kol machmetzes, of these combinations of chametz, is also a safeguard, is also an extra step the Torah put there to keep us away from actual chametz. And therefore, if we have two safeguards, we don't need to combine two safeguards. That's a rule that we normally find by rabbinic law, that we say, ein osin gzera l'gzera, that we don't combine a safeguard with another safeguard. We don't need to make two fences. But maybe Rabbeinu Tam is telling us a big chiddush here, that we don't combine one fence with another, that we don't need to have two safeguards, even when we're dealing with Torah law. And therefore, we don't have to have a prohibition of ownership when dealing with kol machmetzes. And maybe that's what he means when he says, if it weren't for the pasuk, if it weren't for the Torah specifically including it, it wouldn't have been prohibited. He means to say that it's not inherently bad. It's only a safeguard. So therefore, we don't need to put another safeguard on top of it. The safeguard of ownership is itself just a way to keep us distanced, and we don't need to have two distances on top of each other. So this idea that ownership is about keeping us away from the actual iser, perhaps we could use this to explain one of the fundamental issues that come up Pesach time, and one of the big topics of discussion that surround this period. We know that we have a practice, past few centuries, the Jewish people have had a policy of selling their chametz come Pesach time. And it's a policy that in the eyes of some has become a little bit of a joke. People don't necessarily always take it so seriously. They don't think that they're really doing anything meaningful. And it's planned in their calendars many months in advance. Okay, we're going to go to the rabbi and sell our chametz. And they don't think they're really selling it. And they know that the chametz doesn't actually leave the house during that time. And they know that after Pesach, the chametz always ends up coming back to them. And they know that nothing ever changes afterwards. And they don't necessarily take it so seriously. And unfortunately, it starts to feel like a joke. Like you may have heard the line about the idea that the rabbis were going to come out and prohibit smoking. And the Orthodox Jews are not worried because they just plan on selling their lungs to a non-Jew. So just for the record, that doesn't work. But the cynical attitude seems to develop from experiences like this where people feel, okay, I'll sell my chametz before Pesach and I'll get it back after Pesach. And it doesn't seem like anything's different. So where does this whole approach come from? And what's it based on? So perhaps if we understand, like the Ran, and like others who agree with him, and there is a good case to be made that many of the other Rishonim probably agreed with him, that this is indeed the purpose of the Torah with this prohibition of Bal Yirah and Bal Yimatzeh, that it's really there to keep us from eating chametz on Pesach, that if that's really the purpose, so maybe the selling of chametz is actually perfectly aligned with that purpose. That when we sell our chametz before Pesach, so first of all, we're very careful to make sure that the sale is perfectly legal and completely recognized both in terms of halacha and civil law. And what that accomplishes is that if we were to take the chametz over the course of Pesach, so then that would be a violation of stealing, both in terms of halacha and civil law. So if we are careful about the prohibition of stealing, so then that should be absolutely effective in keeping us away from eating chametz on Pesach. And if we believe in accordance with the words of the Ran and all of these Rishonim who are in line with that position, that the reason the Torah prohibits us from owning chametz on Pesach is to keep us from eating chametz, so then perhaps we are in line with the Torah's goal. We are accomplishing what the Torah is asking of us by selling the chametz before Pesach, because it creates a prohibition for us to touch the chametz. So essentially what we are saying is the Torah doesn't want us to eat chametz on Pesach, and the Torah tells us that we have to put into effect safeguards to keep us from eating the chametz. So there are two things we can do that will guarantee that we're not going to eat the chametz on Pesach. Either we can make sure that we have no access at all to the chametz, or we can sell the chametz so that we are subject to a prohibition of not stealing the chametz. And if we are respectful and careful about the prohibition of stealing, so that will go all the distance to keep us from taking the chametz on Pesach. So the sale is enough to create a prohibition of stealing. It doesn't matter that it's still technically in our house. It's in a different room, out of sight and locked up. And the fact that it comes back to us after Pesach doesn't change that fact. For the duration of Pesach, it is off limits to us legally. And that's enough to create a prohibition of lo sigzol, of stealing. And if we are respectful for that of that prohibition, so then that's enough to keep it away from us. And we could perhaps go a little bit further and suggest, in terms of the purpose of the practice, that when it comes to Pesach, we know that we focus on the concept of redemption, on past and future redemptions. And the Smak, the Sefer Mitzvahs Katan, writes that if we look for redemption, we look for a future redemption, so the Jewish people cannot be redeemed if we are not perceived as an honest people. Because, he writes, it will be a Chil Hashem. The nations of the world will ask, how could God redeem a nation that's not perceived as an honest nation? So if we're looking to be redeemed, we have to be a people who is seen as honest. So perhaps the goal is, and the custom has developed, that in the context of Pesach, we seek out an interaction with the Umos HaOlam, with the nations of the world, and we show that we stake our kares, so to speak, we stake our spiritual integrity on the validity and the honesty of that interaction, And we make sure to treat that with full genuineness. So therefore, it's also crucial that that indeed be the case, that we relate to that with full seriousness and honesty in both directions, that we're careful about the integrity of our business dealings in all cases. And this one included, to see the sale as absolute and not do anything that undermine it, because that reflects our commitment to both honesty and to the integrity of this particular transaction, in reflecting our fulfillment of the Torah's mandate not to own chametz on Pesach. So that perhaps reflects one understanding of the prohibition of chametz ownership of Bal Yirah and Bal Yimatzeh. However, we could perhaps add on one other element to it. And this is to go maybe one step beyond this idea that the Ran has, and even that the other Rishonim seem to agree with, that the prohibition is there as a safeguard to keep us from owning chametz on Pesach. And that's to call attention to something else here. That why is it, it's not just a question, why does the Torah prohibit ownership of chametz on Pesach, but why does the Torah prohibit it with two prohibitions? We've been kind of taking it for granted the whole time that it makes sense to have a prohibition of Bal Yirah and also a prohibition of Bal Yimatzeh, two prohibitions that go together. Why do we need them both? Why do we need, literally they translate as, you should not see and you should not find? Why does the Torah need to give us two prohibitions that seem to essentially tell us the same thing? Now, they basically both translate to ownership. And just to give a quick, very quick survey of what they mean practically, even though literally they mean slightly different but overlapping things. So they mean that we should not see or find chametz. What emerges from the Talmud is that they mean we shouldn't see or find our own chametz. So if we were to see or find chametz that belongs to someone else on our property, we wouldn't necessarily violate these Torah prohibitions. So it means seeing or chametz, seeing or finding the chametz that belongs to us. And it sounds like, from the most part, that the two prohibitions inform each other as far as the parameters. And it sounds like, at least according to some Rishonim, there may be some debate about this. There probably is some debate about this. But it seems that, at least according to some of the Rishonim, that I can't violate one without the other. That there's no space where I only violate one of the prohibitions and I don't violate the other prohibition. So why do I have not just one prohibition, but two prohibitions of Bal Yirah and Bal Yimatzeh? And in terms of how you count in the 613 mitzvos, and whatever ramifications there are, so here there is an interesting split. So in the Sefer Achinuch, he counted mitzvos. And in the Rambam, he also counted mitzvos. In the era of the Rishonim, they had different ways and different approaches to how to count the mitzvos. So in the Sefer Achinuch, he counts Bal Yirah and Bal Yimatzeh as one. And in the Rambam, he counts them as two separate mitzvos. So they differ as far as that. But what would happen if you would violate this in the time when there were punishments, when they were giving out lashes, they were giving out malchus for violating these mitzvos? How many times would you get punished? Would you get malchus? So here it's not so explicit, but the Minchas Chinuch, commenting on the Sefer Achinuch, understood that even though he only counts it as one, you'd get two sets of punishments for owning chametz on Pesach. While
theoretically, let's say if you did it actively, let's say you baked the chametz on Pesach. While Rav Soloveitchik understood from the Rambam just the opposite, that even though he counts it as two, if you created the chametz on Pesach, you'd only be punishable once. So it seems like there is quite a debate to be had whether we should relate to this as two prohibitions or one prohibition. So there's a big question to ask here, but essentially we're talking about one fact. Don't own chametz on Pesach. And for some reason, the Torah conveyed it to us with the language of two prohibitions, leaving open a big question: should we relate to it as one prohibition or two prohibitions? Why did that happen? So I think we could suggest a little bit of a further idea here. That maybe, even though practically speaking for us, it means one thing. It means don't own chametz on Pesach. There actually are two ideas here. One idea is what we've been saying the whole time till now, that we shouldn't come to eat the chametz on Pesach, a protective measure. That's really the reason for Bal Yimotze. We shouldn't find Pesach, we shouldn't find on Pesach chametz in our house. So we have to spend time over the next few weeks searching our house, cleaning out our house from chametz, so that on Pesach we shouldn't find chametz in our house, because maybe we'll come to eat it. But when it comes to Bal Yiroya, I think there's a different purpose to it. And if you look at the psukim, I think you'll note there's actually two different issues there. That when it comes to Bal Yimotze, the language is, this is in Parshas Bo, the Torah says, Shivas yamim s'or lo yimotze b'batechem, right? Lo yimotze, you shouldn't find the chametz. Ki kol ochel machmetzas v'nichrasa hanefesh ahi me'adis Yisrael. Right, so you shouldn't find chametz in your house, because whoever eats chametz is subject to karis. You don't want to have chametz in your house because there's a punishment of karis. You're not allowed to eat chametz. That's very bad. So that's the prohibition of Bal Yimotze. That's like the Ran is saying, don't have chametz in your house. If you find it, you'll eat it. That's a bad thing. When it comes to Bal Yiroya, comes up twice in the Torah, both there and in Parshas Re'eh. And there the language is slightly different. There in Parshas Bo, for example, the language is Shivas Yamim Tochol Matzos, Uviyom Hashvi Chag LaShem, Matzos Yeachel Shivas Hayamim, V'lo Yiroi Lecha Chametz, V'lo Yiroi Lecha Soar B'chol Gvulecha, V'igareta Levincha B'yom Hahu Leymor, Bavur Zeh Asa Hashem Lecha B'tzeisim Mitzrayim. So what's the issue there? Well, what's the problem in owning chametz in that context, where the Torah says you shouldn't see chametz? There, the issue is, it's a contradiction to the mitzvah of Haggadah. That when we're trying to tell the story of Pesach, and you have chametz visible in the background, that undermines your story. That takes away from the message of the Haggadah. And therefore, the Torah says that while you are engaged in the mitzvah of Haggadah, you can't also have chametz in the background. And in Parshas Re'eh, in the context of Korban Pesach, so the Torah tells us again that you shouldn't be seeing chametz at the same time as you are engaged in Korban Pesach. So it seems like that's what's going on, that we have two mitzvos here, which in practice converge into one, because they mean the same thing practically for us, that we have to get rid of our chametz before Pesach. But from a Tameh HaMitzvos perspective, so then they mean different things. So perhaps the Rambam counts them as two, and the Torah conveys them as two things because they have two different purposes. But practically speaking, they merge into one. But for our learning, it's important for us to appreciate that they have two different meanings, that we should understand that, yes, there's a siag here that we should keep away from chametz, and selling the chametz perhaps does accomplish that as well. But also there's a message here, and that has something to resonate all year round, the importance of consistency in our messaging. And as we take note of the passing of Reb Chaim Kanievsky on this day of his Levaya, the tremendous message that he conveyed to Klal Yisrael with the consistency of his life and his hasmada and his devotion to learning over the course of a lifetime and what can be accomplished with that kind of consistency. And that message for all of us is a very powerful one. But to appreciate what all of this comes together to convey to us is something that we can take away in a very powerful fashion. So as we, over this next month, are perhaps a little bit intimidated by the responsibility of preparing for Pesach, perhaps we can at the same time embrace the very positive message that there is a symbolism to chametz that the Torah is conveying to us is negative for us, that it represents the Yetzer Hara, it represents allowing time to get the better of us, and therefore Pesach is a time when we push back against that, we show that we can reassert control, that we can reassert discipline over the power of time, and that HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem, that we are able to leave Avdus when we have no control over time, and we are able to say that we are masters of time, and that Chametz is not going to take over us, we are going to take over it, and we're certainly not going to eat chametz, but the Torah tells us that we can't even own chametz, the Ran understanding that that's a safeguard because we're so used to it, if we own chametz we may come to eat it, and we suggested that if it's a safeguard that could also explain Rabbeinu Tam's understanding that taruvas chametz is also a safeguard, so we don't need to combine that with the ownership of chametz, but also that could explain why those of us who are comfortable with selling chametz understand that that is well within the spirit of this prohibition of owning chametz, as long as we take it seriously and we relate to it as a function of keeping us away from chametz fully, because we value the prohibition of lo sigzol. And we mentioned the understanding of the smak, that geula comes when we are perceived as people who are honest, and maybe we intentionally engage in a transaction with Umos HaOlam around the time of Pesach in order to emphasize this value of honesty and integrity as a goal towards redemption. And then we added that as much as all of this is true, it's noteworthy that the Torah actually phrases it as two prohibitions, Bayira and Bayimatze, and that there seems to be a cross in terms of how to relate to this. The Rambam counting it as two prohibitions, but the Rav understanding that only be one set of punishments, and the Sefer Achinuch counting it as one, but the Mechas Chinuch understanding there'd be two set of punishments, and that whole idea, should we see it as two, should we see it as one? So practically speaking, it merges as one, but there seem to be two reasons here that if we look at the psukim, that maybe Bayi Matzeh is about not coming to sin, but Bayi Ra is about not contradicting your educational message, and that when you're trying to convey the Haggadah at the same time as Chametz is visible in the background, that's something that contradicts the message you're trying to display, and that itself is one of the crucial lessons of Pesach, how important it is not to do that, to be able to convey a consistent message, and to say what you're trying to teach loudly and clearly without anything that contradicts that. And if we're able to do that, so then that is one more step towards a successful Pesach, which itself is one more step towards a successful teaching all year round. So I thank you as always. Should have a wonderful day. It should be a day of inspiration and a day of elevation. And we should only know better things.